It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
It was a list that was months in the making, but one the White House has been eager to reveal.
These 10 individuals that the president has chosen were chosen for their deep knowledge of the law and their commitment to upholding constitutional principles.
Fox News has learned that President Trump's first batch of judicial nominees contains 10 judges, including two candidates he previously floated for the Supreme Court, Judges Joan Larson and David Strauss. Larson, who currently sits on the Michigan Supreme Court, is being nominated for the 6th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. Larson is also a former law clerk to the late Justice Antonin Scalia and delivered one of the tributes at his memorial service last year. Strauss is a judge on the Minnesota Supreme Court and previously clerked for Justice Clarence Thomas. He's also been tapped for the 8th Circuit. The judges set to fill some of the scores of openings on the federal bench. 129 vacancies, including 49 judicial emergencies, and over 100 openings at the district court level alone. The longest, a vacancy in the Eastern District of North Carolina that's been unfilled for 11 years.
We always think about the Supreme Court, but more than 99% of the cases are decided at the lower federal courts, at the appellate courts, or at the trial level. So these vacancies, the upwards of 120 vacancies, are very crucial. And President Trump recognized that.
It's expected that the president's nominees will be fast-tracked, thanks in part to a 2013 decision by former Democratic senator from Nevada, Harry Reid, to end the filibuster for lower court nominees.
You are going to be amazed at the exceptionalness of them all. I mean, the qualifications are impeccable.
But even as the administration looks to fill key vacancies on the federal bench, there are still hundreds of administration posts that remain unfilled, including a number of positions at the U.S. Attorney's Office.
We've been tracking where we are. I think we're well on pace with where previous administrations have been. Some ahead, some a little behind. But we're doing a great job of filling those key positions and making sure that we get the right person for the right job.
All right, that was Kevin Corca, Fox News, and that was good news. I wanted to start with that today. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk. We talked a little bit yesterday about the Religious Liberty Order, and I expressed to you my frustration with it. It was so weakened that the ACLU decided not even to sue, and that was discouraging. But, you know, the appointment of these lifetime judges on the issues of religious liberty, do I need to explain what's been happening in the courts? These are lifetime appointments, and you heard Kevin, at least in part, tell you about the qualifications of the nominees. This is a very big deal. And now you also know that the Senate will be able to confirm these nominees with just 51 votes. Of course, here's the thing. We've got, they always say moderate Republicans. Liberal Republicans like Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski and others. We'll just see if they will, you know, the indication is that they will confirm these judges. But I have to say, if the President Trump nominates a really conservative Supreme Court justice, I'm not sure they would. But on these lower court nominations, and these lower courts, by the way, feed into the Supreme Court, you know, these are, you know, grooming grounds for future nominations and for consideration. So anyway, this is really good news. Now, they're not confirmed yet, but they're going to go to the Senate, and they will be, God willing, they will be confirmed. So that's some good news that we could use. I think of Bernell Stutzman in Washington State, the florist. Just a wonderful lady who's losing her business, at least potentially, her mother's business, because she had conscience over arranging flowers for a gay wedding. And I think of course, the young couple from Oregon, the Bakers, the cake bakers, who've lost their business, Melissa and Aaron Klein. And these are the kinds of things in the lower courts where people are losing, and they have been. These are not strange stories to you. You know that people of faith, Christians especially, who are the ones who will stick by their convictions, and there are precious too few of us that do that. They're the ones that are being punished. And so that's a very big deal. And I just wanted to underscore it this morning. Now, another big thing happened yesterday. And actually, we're going to spend most of the show talking about this. And it was a hearing on Capitol Hill. Sally Yates, who was the former deputy attorney general, she was fired by Donald Trump because she refused, absolutely refused, said it was unlawful, his order on immigration. And so she was fired that very night. That's, remember, the first few days of the Trump administration when they were firing on all cylinders before the Obama appointees, holdovers, and the insidious anti-Trumpers and the establishment Republicans got a foothold in the White House and also the family. Okay, I'm just speaking plainly with you. This is when they were actually doing some really bold things. Sally Yates was fired, as she should have been, for refusing to expedite the president's lawful orders. So she testified on Capitol Hill yesterday, along with James Clapper, the former director of national intelligence, who's famously known for lying under oath. And they testified before the Senate Judiciary's Subcommittee on Crime and Terrorism. And, of course, the whole idea is the Trump campaign's connection with Russia. Well, is there a connection with Russia? We're going to talk about that today. You know that I don't believe there is. Not a collusion. A connection, that's very different. Collusion, I don't think so. But we're going to talk about it with a national security expert who has been an acquaintance of mine for a long time. He's a real powerhouse in Washington, and he will join us in a second. But Catherine Herridge, of course, did her sterling job of reporting on this hearing yesterday, and I want you to listen to her report as kind of to whet your appetite as to what we're going to talk about. Here's Catherine.
We felt like it was critical that we get this information to the White House.
Testifying before a Senate committee, Obama administration appointee Sally Yates broke her silence.
Because the vice president was unknowingly making false statements to the public.
The former acting attorney general testified that she met twice in person and had a phone call with the White House counsel Don McGahn because the White House said the incoming national security advisor Mike Flynn did not discuss sanctions in late December with the Russian ambassador when intelligence transcripts showed the opposite.
Not only did we believe that the Russians knew this, but that they likely had proof of this information. And that created a compromise situation, a situation where the national security advisor essentially could be blackmailed by the Russians.
And Yates, who would later lose her job for refusing to back the Trump travel ban, said the Justice Department felt the Flynn situation was serious.
We told them that we were giving them all of this information so that they could take action.
Pressed on whether then-President Obama also warned President-elect Trump not to hire Flynn, the White House spokesman said,
President Obama made it known that he wasn't exactly a fan of General Flynn's, which is, frankly, shouldn't come as a surprise to anyone, that given that General Flynn had worked for President Obama, was an outspoken critic of President Obama's shortcomings.
That's the first part of Catherine's report. So I guess the question is, General Flynn, is he really, he's a colluder with the Russians? That's what he's known for? He lied about it, and he was so unacceptable that Sally Yates had to warn the president, oh, he's danger, he could be blackmailed by the Russians. And then, of course, you heard Obama claim, I think, in the last few days that he tried to warn the president, too. This is a terrible, awful, no good person, this general, Lieutenant General Flynn. And they tried to warn President Donald Trump, but Donald Trump kept him in office in this position as national security advisor for 17 days before he fired. 17 days. And here he is, you know, colluding with the Russians. And here it goes. And so we're going to talk about that. Catherine had more to her report. Let's listen.
Spicer reinforced this presidential tweet that the Obama administration gave Flynn the highest security clearance.
So if President Obama or anyone else, frankly, in the government was concerned, the question should be asked, what did they do? And if nothing, then why not if they really truly were concerned?
And another tweet about how classified information got into the media after Yates briefed the White House.
The tweet speaks for itself. What he's saying is that the Senate should ask those questions.
Have either of you ever been an anonymous source in a news report about matters relating to Mr. Trump, his associates, or Russians' attempt to meddle in the election?
No.
Absolutely not.
Both witnesses confirmed that members of the Trump team were identified or unmasked in intelligence reports.
Did either of you ever review classified documents in which Mr. Trump, his associates, or members of Congress had been unmasked?
Oh, yes.
You have. Can you give us details here?
No, I can't.
Ms. Yates, have you?
Yes, I have, and no, I can't give you details.
The former director of National Intelligence was pressed on his conclusion that there was no evidence of collusion between the Trump campaign and Moscow. Clapper seemed to qualify the statement.
I was not aware of the counterintelligence investigation Director Comey first referred to during his testimony before the House Permanent Select Committee for Intelligence on the 20th of March.
Flynn resigned in mid-February, 18 days after Yates' warning, but neither witness could explain today whether the White House blocked Flynn's access to classified information or barred him from national security discussions.
All right, that's Catherine's report, and that's just to whet your appetite a bit. So Sally Yates, the hero, tried to warn Donald Trump about this terrible, no good Lieutenant General Flynn. And so did President Obama. He was just so bad. They tried to warn him, and Donald Trump wouldn't listen. He hired him anyway. And the inference is, of course, he colluded somehow with the Russians, and that translates to the notion that the Trump administration colluded with the Russians in order to win the elections. It's all very murky, because every time a detail is asked, and they say, we can't discuss that. So here we go, an endless cycle of the dog chasing the tail, and we're going to talk about that at length. But I'm gonna divert, because Bill Gertz will join us in just a second. But let me go back to something else, change the subject a little bit, and then we'll come back to that. We've talked a great deal about the win of Macron in France. You heard the London Daily Mail reporter yesterday on the show. I played a clip of her comments about this, how creepy it was that Macron came on the stage. People were handed flags, and they would wave the flags when the camera would come their way. He came onto the stage not with the anthem of France, but with the song of the European Union. She was very disturbed by that. And I have to say that I heard from Alexandre Pesset, who's often our guest from Paris. He could not join us yesterday morning, but he answered some of my questions. And I want to read to you what he said to me. I asked him, Alex, why did so many not vote or spoil their ballots? And he said many didn't believe in either candidate, and some first-round election asked their voters to do so. What was the greatest fear about Le Pen? And he said 40 years of brainwashing that whatever Le Pen says, it's Nazi. Even if she says it's sunny today, when it is, they think they have to believe the opposite. In other words, half of Macron voters are people who voted against Le Pen thinking the world will fall down, the economy will collapse, immigrants will be kicked out, and so on. The worst is the elite and urban vote. If you look to the electoral map, it's just amazing. Le Pen got up to 70% in poor and average areas, when Macron got 90% in cities and rich neighborhoods. Basically, the one who gets diplomas, the most brainwashed people, voted who they are told to vote for. Where I live, Macron got 90%, and that's Paris. They think they are clever because they're graduated. But in reality, they are the most conformist people on earth. If a journalist or an intellectual tells you to do this or that, they will do it. I ask him about protests. Yes, from the communists and anarchists who would love a revolution, but it will be small groups, the same groups that Macron needs to be the guy who keeps things in order. And I ask, is there relief at the outcome or more concern? And he says, a lot of relief for all the people who are afraid of Le Pen. Concern from everybody else that who will have the majority at the Congress next month, and will Macron be able to govern, and what will he do that's different from Hollande? And he says, I think, and many feel also, we get 5 more years to wait, what we felt with Hollande from day one. So it's a time of despair, really. A despair, maybe that's too strong, but it certainly is discouraging. If you can imagine how we would have felt if Hillary Clinton had won, I think that's how many of the people of France feel. In Paris, it's just amazing. They have had 21 deadly Islamic terrorist attacks in France since the Charlie Hebdo attacks in January 2015. And most of those in Paris, 238 people killed. It's just an amazing story. And yet Macron won 90% of the vote in Paris. Gateway Pundit puts it this way: you can't fix stupid. So that's the update on France. It looks like Merkel is going to prevail in Germany again, too. She's the biggest cheerleader for the EU that there is, and open borders. So Europe is in trouble. Europe is in trouble. We need to pray for them. So when we come back, Bill Gertz, one of my favorite national security experts, will join us, and we're going to talk about these hearings. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
How would you describe your health care? If you're like most Americans these days, the word affordable isn't top of mind. Well, here's some good news. there's actually a trusted healthcare option that is affordable. It's called MediShare. Unlike insurance, MediShare is Christian healthcare sharing, a community of more than 200,000 believers across America who share each other's medical expenses. It's about half the cost of insurance, and it's fully acceptable under the law. And here's the best part. Because MediShare is based on biblical principles, you never pay for things that go against your beliefs. MediShare is affordable healthcare for Christians.
Learn how thousands of Christians can help you save on your healthcare. For your free information guide, call 855-PSALM-23. Now available in Montana. MediShare, affordable biblical healthcare. Call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23.
Your mission is to find Granny and get that sauce.
Affirmative.
1 million moms, in association with American Family Studios, introduces Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent.
I'm Ryan DeFrady's. I work alone.
Ryan is arrogant and reckless until the day he's paired with a very unlikely partner.
No way! I can do this alone, without anyone's help, much less my mom's.
Look, Ryan.
She's my mom!
Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent is the new action-adventure series featuring a young spy with a whole lot to learn.
Mama's coming, sweetie!
She's an agent! Get her, boys!
Each exciting, fun-filled episode teaches children important values, like honoring parents and respecting authority. And there's a brief wrap-up at the end that connects the story to a biblical illustration. Ryan DeFrady's Secret Agent. Perfect for children ages 6 and over. Order yours today at ryansecretagent.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and Commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Peter Koh, and I'm a business major, and this is my junior year at the college. What I love about the athletics here at Truett McConnell University is the coaches and their side of trying to teach sports from a biblical mindset with sportsmanship involved, and it really changes the way that you pursue the game, not just passionately doing it for other people, but also for yourself and to glorify God in that, which is completely different from most other schools.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
LGBT Canadians are furious after the Niagara Catholic School District canceled performances of a play about gender identity, a play designed for grade schoolers. The show features an 8-year-old boy who dresses as a girl and questions his gender. Now, who in their right mind thinks it's okay to teach kids that young about gender issues in a Catholic school? Director Jessica Carmichael accused the Catholic School District of intolerance, transphobia, homophobia, misogyny. As I wrote in my new book, The Deplorable's Guide to Making America Great Again, grade schools have been turned into left-wing indoctrination centers. It's imperative for parents to engage with educators so they can fight back against the social justice warriors. Otherwise, American and Canadian schools will simply become playgrounds for the gender and sex revolutionaries. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
He felt like the vice president was entitled to know that the information he had been given and that he was relaying to the American public wasn't true. And that created a compromise situation, a situation where the national security advisor essentially could be blackmailed by the Russians. We told them that we were giving them all of this information so that they could take action, the action that they deemed appropriate.
Oh, that was Sally Yates, former deputy attorney general. She's the heroine, of course, because she tried to warn Donald Trump that Lieutenant General Flynn was, you know, we infer, colluding with the Russians, and he lied about it, and he lied to Vice President Pence, and she tried to warn Donald Trump, and he wouldn't listen. So that's kind of the way it came down yesterday. Bill Gertz, by the way, is one of my favorite national security experts. He used to be a frequent guest with me in Chicago. I learned so much of what I know about China and its military buildup from Bill Gertz. He's the senior editor of the Washington Free Beacon. He's also the national security columnist for the Washington Times. His latest book is I, War, War and Peace in the Information Age, and I've asked him to join us to make our way through this mess this morning. Good morning, Bill. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, Sandy. Good to be on the program.
You know what? I want to talk about Michael Flynn for a second, because I feel that the details of what he actually did and who he actually is never get talked about. It's always these slurs are these careless statements that have inferences but no details. What in the world, if this, we know that this transcript of his conversation with the Russian ambassador was, we have a transcript. The Washington Post had it. Why don't you and I know what he said? Or do we? Do you know, Bill, what he said?
No, and that's the real problem here. You have two competing narratives, one from the Democrats that have been pushing this false Russian collusion angle, and then the Republicans are focusing on who leaked this sensitive intelligence of a U.S. citizen talking to the Russian ambassador, something that he was permitted to do, and as the incoming expected national security advisor. So, again, these two competing narratives were on display at this big Senate hearing yesterday.
Okay, so I'm going to say it again. We don't know what Lieutenant General Flynn said. I believe, as I understand it, Bill, I believe that the narrative that I've heard is that General Flynn was asked about the sanctions, and he said something like, I mean, how would we know? He said something like, I can't, you know, we can discuss that later, but, you know, that we can discuss that, basically. Now, I don't know if that's accurate or not, but that's what I've heard from other security experts. But I still, back to the question, why don't you know what that transcript says? How come the Washington Post knows and you don't know?
Right, and this is the real story here. And I read that initial Washington Post piece, and from that you can get what's going on. It quoted a former senior Obama administration official as saying that the administration was scrambling to go through all this various intelligence looking for negative information. It's clearly a political attack operation, in my view. And we need to know what was said there. I think it's incumbent upon the intelligence community to release that information. At this point, there's no real reason that it should be kept secret. And I think it's important that it gets out there so that everybody can make their judgment on what happened. I think the problem is that Trump fired Flynn, and that was because he wasn't clear on what he said in his conversation with the Russian ambassador, and that led to Pence giving some misleading information to the public.
Yes, and that's kind of the way I read it too, Bill. It seems to me, based on what bits I know and have read, it looks to me like it could likely be a case of Mike Pence and, it sounds like, Reince Priebus being so torqued that Pence, whose word means a great deal to him and his reputation as an honest person, was so upset that Michael Flynn lied on the issue of it just coming up in the conversation with the ambassador, that the reaction was kind of vehement, and I think it was kind of, okay, this is my speculation, that it was kind of a loyalty test for the president, that he had to kind of get rid of Flynn in order to pacify Vice President Pence and Reince Priebus. And I don't know if you think that's a possible explanation. From what I'm hearing, that just makes sense to me.
Yeah, it's clear that's probably what was the calculus. You had to... You had to satisfy the concerns of the vice president or lose your critical national security advisor. And of course, we're still feeling the effects of that. There's been political attacks. I've been reporting on it, how the intelligence community has politicized the security clearance process at the White House. They first denied the clearance to one of Flynn's advisors, Robin Townley, who was an African affairs expert on the NSC staff. And then just recently, the Pentagon pulled the security clearance for another person on the NSC staff, Adam Lovinger, who is an important strategic analyst on loan from the Pentagon. So clearly there's a political fallout from this Flynn affair still going on.
And just to be clear, Bill, these national security clearances are essential. It's like trying to shop when you don't have a credit card. I don't want to put it that you can't manage the economy if you don't have credit, and you cannot do the job that, in the case of certainly Adam Lovinger and Robin Townley, you can't do those jobs unless you have that clearance. And my understanding is Adam Lovinger has now been transferred to like a desk where he's doing clerical work, and he's this national security expert par excellence. And he was, but was he, is it true to say that he would have been part of the Lieutenant General Flynn component of like mind with General Flynn?
Yes, yes, and more importantly, he was going to transfer a really important component at the Pentagon that's having all kinds of political problems, called the Office of Net Assessment. It's kind of like a think tank within the Office of the Secretary of Defense, and he had a plan to beef up this important capability and bring it to the White House, where it originally was created back in the Nixon administration. And, of course, that set off a turf war with the current director of the Office of Net Assessment, a retired general named James Baker. And, of course, this is all kind of inside baseball, but it's extremely important from a strategic standpoint because the U.S. really needs to develop strategic analysis. It's one of the Achilles heels of the U.S. government. Every 4 years we have a turnover in administrations, and we need to set a really important strategic direction for the country, and that's what they were trying to do, and now that's in jeopardy.
So my understanding is that James Baker, who was an Obama appointee, who's still in place in the Pentagon, personally oversaw, okay, this is according to what I'm reading, the stripping of the national security clearance for Adding Lovinger, who was an ally or at least a like mind with the general, Lieutenant General Flynn. So now, there's a lot of bad things going on here, Bill. And I guess the question would be, you know, why in the world is a James Baker still in place? And that leads us to, I know this is hard for people to follow, but it leads us to reports now about the conflict between General McMaster, who took Lieutenant General Flynn's place as the head of the National Security Council, and President Trump, who I guess, according to my sources, are meeting today. So McMaster now seems to be in allegedly in the crosshairs of the president. What do you know about that?
Yeah, that's an important column by my friend Eli Lake, who writes for Bloomberg View. He had a really significant column showing that there were these differences between Trump and McMaster. One of the key factors was that McMaster, H.R. McMaster, who's a three-star general, had called the South Koreans after Trump had said publicly that he wanted South Korea to pay for the deployment of the THAAD anti-missile system, and that angered the president because it undermined his ability to put pressure on the Seoul government to try and do more to pay for its defense, the U.S. defenses over there, which are very expensive. We have about 28,000 troops there and a lot of forces, and Trump has been outspoken since the campaign that he wants America's allies to do more to pay for American forces that are deployed in defense of those countries.
Well, and the other big thing that people would recognize is, my understanding is McMaster, again, who took Flynn's place, who was the fair-haired boy, the choice, the thrill of the Washington establishment, the fact that McMaster was appointed, tried and cajoled and sent memos and tried to shame Donald Trump from not saying radical Islamic terrorism, which Donald Trump did in his State of the Union address and underscored each word, radical Islamic terrorism, to put McMaster in his place. But it's my understanding is it's only gotten worse. So here we have the replacement for General Flynn, really being at odds with the purposes and goals of the sitting president. It's an unusual situation, isn't it, Bill? And my understanding, again, from reading other things this morning, is that McMaster might actually be on his way out. What do you think about that?
That I don't know, but it's clear to me that there's a lot of elbowing going on inside the White House in terms of policy positions and personnel, and this is going to be an ongoing political battle between the various factions inside. On the one hand, you have kind of the Jared Kushner faction, who's emerged as a real power player. He's the son-in-law of the president, and he kind of represents the New York business faction. Then you have the Steve Bannon, kind of the populist faction. He was again, the key player in getting Trump elected, in really reaching out and using the populist notion. So, like I say, we're seeing this play out in real time in Washington. There's a big fight going on, and it'll probably be another few weeks before things are settled or they settle down.
Yeah, and we just pray that they settle down in the right way. Now, let's go back to Michael Flynn, because I don't want to leave that dangling. I confess to you, I have an affection for Lieutenant General Flynn. He's been on the show before all this dust up, and I remember so well how he opposed President Obama so boldly that he was fired by President Obama. But Bill, I was just reading that the White House staff has been, whoever that is, you could fill in the blank, as we just talked about all the different factions, have been doing a steady drumbeat to sort of defame Michael Flynn. Why all of that? Why?
Well, he has triggered a huge backlash from the intelligence and national security bureaucracy, and that's my view. Yeah, I like Michael Flynn as well. I thought he was a great choice. And the most important thing that he was going to do was to reform the U.S. intelligence community, which is in urgent need of reform. I mean, we're spending tens of billions of dollars annually on an intelligence system that's really broken. And that needs to be made clear. And I think, you know, I argue this in my book, IWAR, that there needs to be a political capability to make the case in public about the problems of U.S. intelligence agencies. Oftentimes what happens is secrecy is invoked and you can't have a discussion, and when you finally do get a discussion, when you ask questions and seek answers, the intelligence community says, well, we can't discuss that because it's classified information. So we need to have a real debate on the problems of U.S. intelligence, and I think Flynn was going to do that, and I think that's urgently needed. It's still needed, and I think the president should form a commission and put Flynn in charge of it on reforming U.S. intelligence, and I think that would be a good way to counterattack this liberal left narrative that there is this false notion of Russian collusion. Again, we haven't seen any evidence of that, and there isn't any evidence. And I think, having worked in Washington for so many years, if there was, it would have leaked out by now. And the fact that it didn't shows that this is just a canard on the part of the liberal left using it to attack the president and his administration.
And, of course, proof of that is the fact that they will not release, they are not releasing the details of General Flynn's conversation with the Russian ambassador. If there was some there, they would have released that, Bill. We would know right. What was said in that conversation. Instead, they just settle for inference. And to your point about saying we can't talk about that, that's what happened in the hearing yesterday.
I think that the Republicans also need to really strike back against the false narrative by going forth with what the House Intelligence Committee Chairman Devin Nunes was doing. He has uncovered information indicating that the Obama administration launched some type of political operation using foreign intelligence collection as cover. And that's really the key issue for me. And I think that, of course, the left then attacked Nunes, accused him of leaking information. He's now facing an ethics inquiry and has been sidelined. So this is kind of all-out political warfare in Washington, and the Republicans really got to fight hard.
Yeah, I wonder if they'll learn how to do that, Bill. I keep waiting for that. Been waiting for decades, actually. But Devin Nunes, into the ethics charge, there was a bill passed under Harry Reid or Nancy Pelosi, or a procedure in the House where anybody could bring an accusation against anyone. It could be anonymous. And then these members of Congress, the conservatives, have just been reeling under this because it takes them thousands of dollars to defend themselves. So this is how they are. This is warfare. As you said, this is political warfare, and these are things that the people in the people listening to us wouldn't know about, but this is why we're on the front lines, to give them warning, and to give them warning. Bill Gertz, again, Bill is the author of I, War, War and Peace in the Information Age, a senior editor for the Washington Free Beacon, and we'll put, Bill, your latest articles on our Facebook page so people can see what you're writing, okay?
Okay, thanks very much.
Okay, great to talk to you, Bill. Thanks so much. This is Sandy Rios. We'll be right back, and we're going to talk about more of that hearing in just a second, so stay tuned.
Look at the ships. Though they are large, they are guided by a very small rudder.
My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. According to the LA Times, language has evolved. So, it forbids its writers from using certain words now. Words like homosexual, transsexual, and openly gay have fallen out of acceptable usage. They are offensive and must be avoided at all costs. Interestingly, this comes from the same people who are all too eager to get America to abandon English as our official language. Language is one of the cornerstones of any culture. Change the language, you change the culture.
Visit the Hamilton Corner on the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
This is John Fuller, and on the next Focus on the Family, you want to stop marriage meltdowns before they start, emotional explosions that come out of the blue and turn a happy couple into strangers. You'll learn how to do that and to live more peaceably with your spouse on the next Focus on the Family with Jim Daly.
Focus on the Family is heard each weekday morning at 5 o'clock Central on American Family Radio.
Consider serving with Friendships. It's an all-volunteer ministry providing aid to disaster victims, refugees, and the impoverished here at home and around the world. We're now taking applications. If you're available to serve without pay, you can be part of the crew reaching out to help people in need. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
This is Barry McGuire. I'm a car guy, and I love to lead people to Jesus Christ as a layman outside the walls of the church. The freedom that our Constitution guarantees to openly share our faith is under attack. Many of those in power actually believe we should not be allowed to share our faith in public. Pastors' sermons have even come under scrutiny. Regardless of whether you voted for him or not, we currently have a president that's an outspoken champion for religious liberty and a Congress that supports him on this issue. But this can change over the next election cycle. All this speaks to the urgency of the Great Commission. The battle for the soul of America is spiritual, not political. It can only be won by all of us who are known by his name, honoring God's call to share his love with everyone every day. He said they'll know you're his disciple by your love. And it's time to report for duty. Your job is to ignite revival outside the walls of your church by moving everybody you're with today closer to Jesus. If you want to know how easy that is, go to ROTW.com.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. This weekend's French election brought to power Emmanuel Macron, a self-professed globalist. He exemplifies the ominous phenomenon of transnationalism in Europe and elsewhere, including the United States. Like his fellow transies, France's new president has a low regard for such concepts as national borders, identity, culture, and inevitably, security. He has embraced continuing immigration and the Sharia supremacists who are exploiting it to transform France beyond recognition. There is now little hope for slowing the subordination of the French to the dictates of a sovereignty-crushing European Union, and inexorably, there will be more accommodations to the Islamists' demands for submission by secular, non-Muslim France. If so, history will likely record the choice made by the French this week as the tipping point for Western civilization on the continent of Europe, and a rising challenge to the United States and a shrinking free world. This is Frank Affney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
It's true that President Obama made it known that he wasn't exactly a fan of General Flynn's, which is frankly shouldn't come as a surprise to anyone, that given that General Flynn had worked for President Obama, was an outspoken critic of President Obama's shortcomings. If President Obama was truly concerned about General Flynn, why didn't he suspend General Flynn's security clearance, which they had just reapproved months earlier? Additionally, why did the Obama administration let Flynn go to Russia for a paid speaking engagement?
Oh, that was Sean Spicer responding to questions by reporters yesterday about, you know, this whole canard of President Obama trying to warn President Trump about Michael Flynn and how bad he was. And also Sally Yates trying to warn, oh, my goodness, you know, she knew the vice. She's trying to protect the vice president was out there telling untruths because Michael Flynn was, well, you know, he talked to the Russian ambassador and said whatever he said, but they won't tell us what he said because I think if we had the transcript, we would see that very little was said. It's probably, I'm sure it is likely true that Michael Flynn denied having discussed the sanctions, but to what degree he discussed them, it sounds as though, as I said with Bill Gertz a few minutes ago, that General Flynn was asked about them and said something to the effect, this is what I believe Michael Flynn has said, that we can discuss those later, but did not get into details. If he had gotten into details promising to relieve the sanctions, don't you think we'd know about it? If they're going to leak this conversation with the Russian ambassador, why wouldn't they, if it's so incriminating, why don't we know what they said? Why does the Washington Post know this and we don't know? I'm just curious. Don't you think the New York Times would be eager to spill, Politico, what was actually said that was so harmful? And yet they have managed to damage Lieutenant General Flynn to such an extent, it's amazing to me. And remember that General Flynn was one of the outspoken persons on the whole issue of radical Islamic terror and also on the Muslim Brotherhood. So he's got so many strikes against him. He was out to reform the national security agencies, and he was out to establish the Muslim Brotherhood as a terrorist organization, designate them in the United States. I mean, a lot of reasons why Washington was in an uproar about Lieutenant General Flynn. And actually, in a New York Times article this morning, I'll just read it to you. You know, if you read the New York Times or you listen to other outlets, you would not know what I'm telling you. You wouldn't have that perspective at all. Here's from the New York Times, titled, Who's Afraid of Mr. Flynn? This is just a segment of an article. Perhaps the biggest takeaway on Monday at the hearings was that a lot of people had serious concerns about Mr. Flynn serving as national security advisor, but none of them was named Donald J. Trump. Well, yeah, so see, it's true, they were concerned, but not for the reasons they're inferring. And so, and then it goes on, President Barack Obama, who fired Mr. Flynn as director of the Defense Intelligence Agency in 2014, warned Mr. Trump against hiring the retired three-star general. See, hear all of this, you know, it's like the game of gossip. Oh, do you know Mary Smith? Oh, I know Mary. Oh, yes, I know Mary. And we don't know anything about Mary Smith. We don't know what you know. We don't know if it's a bad thing, but it's inferred by your tone of voice that Mary Smith is, there's something not quite right there, you know. And so this is kind of the game that's being played, and it's amazing how effective it is, really. Now, James Clapper, the former director of National Intelligence, was on Meet the Press with Chuck Todd a few months ago. And I think they replayed this at the hearing yesterday when Chuck Grassley was the chairman. You're going to hear the clip of him with Chuck Todd addressing the issue of Russian collusion with the Trump campaign. And then following that, you're going to hear, come back live to the hearing, and you're going to hear first James Clapper and then Sally Yates respond to the clip. Let's listen.
We did not include any evidence in our report, and I say our, that's NSA, FBI, and CIA with my office, the Director of National Intelligence, that had anything, that had any reflection of collusion between members of the Trump campaign and the Russians. There was no evidence of that included in our report.
I understand that, but does it exist?
Not to my knowledge.
Is that still accurate?
It is.
My answer to that question would require me to reveal classified information. I think that Director Clapper also said that he was unaware of the FBI counterintelligence investigation.
So what exactly does that mean? First you hear James Clapper saying there's no evidence, we're not seeing anything. He's telling Chuck Todd that. And then you have Lindsey Graham asking, do you still stand by that? Yes, I do. Sally Yates, I can't talk about that. This is what they always do. You know, really and truly, wouldn't it be good to gavel that hearing to a close and say, we're going to adjourn for a minute, we're going to go in the back room, and we're going to read that transcript. We're going to subpoena the Washington Post. We should be able, I guess, to see the transcript of what Lieutenant General Flynn said. We need to know how he colluded. We need to know how this took place. And not so much because Sally Flynn, I tried to warn the president and, I can't talk about that. I can't talk about that. But the Director of National Intelligence now has gone on record twice publicly now, at least twice, saying that there's no evidence of collusion with the Russians. I know that's not a shock to many of you, and yet it would be a shock to people that read the New York Times or the Washington Post or watch CNN or you fill in the blank, because that's the narrative. It's an amazing thing. And, of course, this is the nature of propaganda and fake news. This is fake news. This is fake news. And it's very, very dangerous for all of us because, you know, I became aware years ago when I started doing radio and getting into what was going on with the left. And at first I couldn't understand why people were proposing policies that made no sense and were so harmful. And I thought it's not a matter of IQ because people on the other side are just as smart. What are they missing? Why are they doing this? And then I realized it was purposeful, finally, when I learned about the Cloward-Piven strategy of manufacture crisis, which just sounds like a mouthful, and it is. But it's a whole strategy to undermine and to overwhelm in order to destroy. And so I finally understood that the point is destruction. The point is not, you know, this is a different way. I have a different view, like Paul Ryan's better way. You know, I'm not accusing Paul Ryan of being, although he's cooperating with the left, even if he doesn't really mean to. Let's just say he doesn't really mean to. But it's not that they're looking for a better way. It's that they're looking for destruction. They're trying to destroy and deconstruct. They have a very specific purpose. A lot of people cooperating with that don't necessarily know what's going on. They're just mindless robots, like my friend Alexander from Paris was describing the Paris election. It's the elites in Paris, the 90% that voted for Macron, who do whatever they're told. They're the educated ones. They're the ones with the degrees, and they think they're so smart, and yet they do everything they're told. They wave the flags. They listen to the EU anthem as they march to their own destruction. It is an amazing story. So you have some who know exactly what they're doing, manipulating minds with propaganda, hate speech codes, and then you have a vast amount of people who just, oh, yeah, yeah, oh, yeah, well, yes. I was just talking to my husband yesterday about how much of this is like when you were a kid and your parents taught you to think independently. They did, right? Boy, I tell you, mine did. Like if labels were popular, certain things were popular, you know what? I couldn't get them. My parents made a concerted effort to teach me not to be like, and they used to say in the old days, they would say, be like the Joneses. Are the neighbors. We don't do what the neighbors do. We do what's right. We are independent thinkers. And then that gets into, you know, junior high peer pressure where everybody's thinking this, so you must think this. Or high school, everybody's doing this, so you must do this. And it translates into independent thought where you break loose from the notion that because the group thinks a certain way, that you must think a certain way. But now we have a nation, a world that thinks they must think a certain way because the group thinks that way. And they can't even break out of it. They must buy North Face jackets. They must have an Apple phone. I'm sorry. I'm not saying anything's wrong with either of those things. I'm just saying that we go to Starbucks coffee because if you're cool, you go to Starbucks coffee. What's the matter with us? We are group thinkers. I guess we are created. I don't know. We are sheep. And so this is what we have to resist. We have one shepherd, and it's his voice that we must hear. And so we have to break out of this groupthink because the sheep are hurtling toward a disaster over the cliff. And we have to stop that. My understanding is that Donald Trump is trying to stop his staff from dumping on General Flynn. He said, according to a report in Axios that came out Sunday, it said administration officials have been attacking Flynn to reporters. When I think about Reince Priebus and I think about Mike Pence, I don't think of, now this may be different now with Mike Pence. It's now that he's vice president. I'm sure he has had a lot of briefings on national security, but I don't think that was his bailiwick. So I think there's a learning curve, and maybe they didn't even know who Lieutenant General Michael Flynn was and why he was important and why he was a champion and why actually it was a good choice of Donald Trump's to put him in that national security advisor position for all of the reasons we've talked about. because all they know is the voices from the establishment are saying, oh, Michael Flynn, oh my goodness, because the intelligence communities were up in arms about what he wanted to do to rein in their power. So anyway, I've talked over. I wanted to play Senator Grassley questioned Clapper and Yates, and I want you to at least hear this exchange. Let's listen.
Did either of you ever review classified documents in which Mr. Trump, his associates, or members of Congress had been unmasked?
Oh, yes.
You have. Can you give us details here in this?
No, I can't.
Ms. Yates, have you?
Yes, I have, and no, I can't give you details.
Okay. Did either of you ever share information about en masse Trump associates or members of Congress with anyone else?
Well, I'm thinking back over 6.5 years. I could have discussed it with either my deputy or my general counsel.
Ms. Yates?
In the course of the Flynn matter, I had discussions with other members of the intel community. I'm not sure if that's responsive to your question.
And in both cases, you can't give details here?
No.
No.
The FBI notified the Democratic National Committee of the Russians' intrusion into their systems in August of 2015. But the DNC turned down the FBI's offer to get the Russians out and refused the FBI access to their servers. Instead, it evidently eventually hired a private firm in the spring of 2016. WikiLeaks began releasing the hacked DNC emails last July. It took roughly 27,000 of the 27,500 DNC emails it released were emails sent after the FBI notified the DNC of the breach. Mr. Clapper, would you agree that one of the lessons of this episode is that people should cooperate with the FBI when notified of foreign hacks instead of stonewalling?
Yes, sir. I generally think that's a very good idea.
All right. Well, that's... The whole point there is that the DNC, they made much, you know, pulling their hair out about how the Russians leaked their email to the public, and we know those were damning email, and that you can't change what the content of the email was. Nobody's responsible for that. The emails were very damaging. When we found out the collusion Podesta was amazing. His were the most revealing. But what we know now is that the FBI wanted to warn the DNC that their email were being hacked and wanted to go in and help them, and the DNC wouldn't let the FBI. The DNC would not let the FBI, so they hired a private firm. And my understanding is the private firm was suspect, and then that's when all of this stuff came out. WikiLeaks got a hold of them. So it's just, do you see how convoluted, how complicated, and how easily our thoughts are manipulated? Because how could we possibly listen? This is why you vote for people to go represent you in Washington, because you have lives. How can you possibly track all of this? And this is why we need men of integrity in Washington and women of integrity in Washington. And for women of integrity in Washington, where are they in the Congress? I don't know. Serving us faithfully and getting to the bottom of these things. And you can hear the subterfuge of when they would... we can't talk about that. We can't talk about that. This is the way the game is played. So we'll see. Sally Yates will probably, as they say, be elected to Senate for the Democrats. I'm sure that'll be the next thing. Sandy Rios in the morning.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.